peace. It's a noble idea. To achieve peace, understanding, truth, confession, admission, compromise are among the requirements. This past week saw the official formation, led by Donald Trump, of the Gaza Board of Peace. Now, questions have quickly followed the signing of the charter in Davos this past week. Is the focus aimed properly, correctly, efficiently? Or are the nations who are signed on to this idea effective participants? Why have other nations declined to sign on, at least at this point? Are there ulterior motives behind this plan? Here to look at all of this is the Executive Director of Scholars for Peace in the Middle East, Executive Director of the Association for the Study of the Middle East and Africa, author of the book, The Wars Over Words and Deeds, Asaf Romorowski. How are you today, sir?
Doing all right. Good morning.
And for the respective websites with Mr. Romorowski, we have these at our homepage, of course, SPME for Scholars for Peace in the Middle East, and for the Association of the Study of the Middle East and Africa, ASMEAScholars.org. And again, we have those links at our homepage. So when you first heard of the plans, the intention for what's called the Gaza Board of Peace, what were your initial thoughts? And when you saw what unfolded this past week, did those initial thoughts and hopes change in any way for you, sir?
Well, I mean, I think that it has a nice aspirational goal. There are many minds and red flags that I see along the way. I mean, namely, for starters, the fact that Qatar and Turkey were invited to join, and the fact that those two in particular actors were complicit with 10-7, that's a non-starter for the Israelis. The other part, which is part of trying to dissect the Board of Peace, which is a little bit convoluted the entire org chart as you look at it. The fact of the matter is that there were two demands beginning between phase one and phase two. Phase one also demanded bringing back all the hostages dead and alive. We're still waiting on one more hostage to come back, which is yet to come back. And the other part, which is the demilitarizing of Hamas itself. And so, of course, Hamas has refused that. And though yesterday in Davos, Jared Kushner did make a comment to say that the demilitarization of Hamas is still on the table. The concern that the Israelis have that this entire architecture is really allowing Hamas to thrive and giving them oxygen and being part of the reconstruction of Gaza in the day after tomorrow. But these are the challenges. I think that on a positive note, it's good that Trump is actually taking initiative and trying to create this as far as the expansion of the Abraham Accords and whatnot. But Gaza is still a very complex arena and still considered to be a war zone.
You mentioned the Abraham Accords. Does this Board of Peace distract or take away or divert attention from what the Abraham Accords were intended to do?
Well, the Abraham Accords were a major feat in the sense that it created normalization between Israel and its neighbors. There is the one partner who's yet to join yet, which I think everybody is still waiting on, are the Saudis. The Saudis have a little bit of cold feet these days, with their own challenges with some of the Emiratis and other Gulf states. And they have predicated their involvement on the beginning of or the reconstruction of Gaza and, you know, trying to establish a two-state solution as far as the way they see it. Easier said than done. It's also worthy reminding your listeners that back in 2000, the Saudis also put money for trying to create a coastal area where there could be condos on the coast of Gaza and a resort area and things of the sort. That never came to fruition, obviously. So we have a lot of challenges in that regard. In this particular area, I would say that they're using Gaza, which needs a great deal of rehabilitation and a great deal of money, which is why every country is demanded to give it $1 billion to start this. That's where it's all coming from. But I don't see this happening immediately, and it's much more complex. And, of course, the looming threat of Iran, which also represents a larger destabilizing force of the region at large.
With Iran in mind, too, the fact that Trump has positively invited Russia, in other words, Vladimir Putin, to be a part of the Board of Peace, when you look into the facts and the history of how much support Russia has given Iran, where in the realm of possibilities can that association end well with the Board of Peace?
Agreed. I mean, I think that that's these are all major red flags. And the Russian and the Chinese have been funding the Iranians. I think it's good that he's getting international buy-in. Everybody sees Gaza as ground zero for a lot of activities in the region. But until there's going to be an alternative for Hamas, let's also not forget that this entire war that began on 10/7 is part of a multi-front war with Iran. Iran has had more blood, more American blood on its hands than any other country, and every involvement of terrorism today over the past four decades has involved the Iranians. And so it's good in theory. When it comes to the granular practicalities of how to configure the politics of who's on the ground and who's actually going to allow this to happen is much more challenging. I don't see any problem allowing international forces as part of this international stabilization force coming into the Israeli side. I have a difficult time seeing Hamas, who is still controlling the other 50% of Gaza, allowing anybody but themselves to come in security-wise and try to govern the area. So they're going to balk at that.
So with that, Sasha Romorowski, Executive Director of the Scholars for Peace in the Middle East, SPME.org, Executive Director of the Association for the Study of the Middle East and Africa, ASMEAScholars.org, and also author of the book, The War is Over, Words and Deeds, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. How important is it to watch? I mean, it's obvious to watch what Hamas does. Still waiting to see whether Israel comes on board with more than just words, which is where they're at this point right now as far as becoming a part of the Gaza Board of Peace after initial objection, strong objection, too. How important is it to watch Jared Kushner? Because, as you said, there have been hints and plans, wishes, whims, call them whatever you will, that Gaza could be some sort of luxury oceanfront resort area, and that's certainly something that Jared Kushner has ties with as far as construction and other assets to make that happen. And what does that mean for the people of Gaza, who have been the total victims in all of this?
Again, one needs to, I mean, I think if we care about the betterment of the people of Gaza, then you need to get Hamas out of the way. I mean, you need to divorce Palestinian society from Hamas, which is a Islamist terrorist group which is abusing its own people. And so, not to mention the fact that we've seen over the past course of the war, they've been stealing the goods, they've been abusing the people. I mean, Hamas is not a partner for peace. Hamas is, you know, demand. Still calling for the annihilation of the state of Israel and still killing Israelis, Americans, and Westerners. It's all part of their charter. So that hasn't changed. I mean, they may try to sell themselves as changing their attitude as far as trying to look for a group that is talking to reform and governance, and they may put on suits, but their ideology hasn't changed. And I think we cannot forget that. I mean, the fact of the matter is that part of the failures of 10/7 was not paying enough attention to the agenda of Hamas. And they've been building these terror tunnels for 20 years. This is a larger architecture of terrorism that hasn't gone away. I don't see any future where Hamas is going to coexist and coincide with Israel. So if we care about trying to about the Arab Palestinians, then Hamas cannot be that governing body. I'm also skeptical about whether or not the Palestinian Authority is an alternative. They're a little bit more secular in their narrative, but not that much in their larger ideology of annihilationism. And so I think that we have a problem here. And so this is where all these other parties are coming in, outside parties, and can you try to create something by way of an alternative? But step one still needs to be Hamas cannot be part of any of this. And I think that that's where we're stuck here. If Hamas is given the impression that it's going to be part of a political entity and trying to differentiate supposedly between the political wing of Hamas versus the military wing of Hamas, let's have no illusions about that. They are one and the same.
Would the key be for a successful, effective dealing with Hamas being to look back at what was done right, what was done wrong during the days of dealing and trying to put in diplomacy and negotiations with the PLO back in the days?
Potentially. You have to have a partner for somebody. But, you know, again, one of the main conditions for, you know, and it was back in the Oslo days, back in the 90s, was recognition of the other rights to exist. I mean, so far there is no mutual recognition. And I think that, yes, there's been a great deal of suffering. There's been a great deal of collateral damage. There's a lot of destruction that needs to be looked at. But are you putting your eggs in the Hamas basket, which still is committed to killing Israelis, Jews, and Americans worldwide, as part of this configuration? I have a difficult time with that. I mean, again, I think that what got Hamas to the table, and, you know, going back to how the ceasefire came about, was the fact that its patrons, namely the Qataris and the Turks, who had their own national interests from the administration, they wanted the F-35s, the Turks, and of course the Qataris want, you know, as far as expansion of the air base, and so all those are things that they want, and they basically convinced Hamas that this is the best deal you're going to get 2+ years after the war itself, and so they have their own goals in mind. That being said, I think that's also how they are part of the conversation now and still part of the, they were also invited to join the board. Do you trust these people and these actors who are actively state sponsors of terrorism? And I think that that's, to my mind, I'm quite skeptical about that. Whether or not there'll be other pressure coming in from other Arab partners, you know, again, Saudis, Egyptians, Jordanians, money coming in that will allow the financial incentives to kind of reconfigure and control the area with some of this, potentially, but it doesn't solve the ideological problems and their narrative of destruction and annihilationism.
And for you listening, just to wrap up here, if you want to get a better idea of the stumbling block, the high hurdle Hamas provides, we have a copy of their charter at our downloads page for you to review. But as I've said, it's just recognizing that Israel can exist. Even at this point, Hamas has yet to do that. He is the Executive Director of Scholars for Peace in the Middle East, SPME.org. Also Executive Director of the Association for the Study of the Middle East and Africa, ASMEAscholars.org. And author of the book, The Wars Over Words and Deeds. Asaf Romorowski, thanks so much for your insight, for being here today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.